A city is stronger together. So let's hear from the business and community leaders that keep Milwaukee on the upswing. Presented by Horicon Bank, the natural choice for all your banking needs. Now here's the host that's always on the upswing, WTMJ's Jeff Sherman.
Now, to business, gentlemen.
Welcome to the Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. As always, a big thank you to the good, community-minded people at Horicon Bank for their support. It's that time of the year again. You got toys, you got lights, laughter, maybe even a little friendly competition in our area bars and restaurants. This week on the Upswing, we're going to talk about that. It's the business of play, right? How both kids and adults are bringing fun to life around the holiday season, and how Milwaukee and Wisconsin businesses are leaning into the season. First, though, I need to remind you, if I may, it's really easy to lean in and donate to kids. You got toys. You go out, you buy a new unwrapped toy, donate it to the annual Capco Kids to Kids Toy Drive. If you want to just donate online, you go to WTMJTrivia.com and do so. But Capco Kids to Kids Christmas has collected more than 300,000 toys since 2005. It's a true legacy holiday event across all communities. Next Wednesday, this next Wednesday, the 17th, you can get out to the Hot House Tavern in Menominee Falls. You can play a trivia powered by Quizmaster Trivia, meet some of our good friends and teammates at ESPN Milwaukee, bring a toy, support Capco's annual Kids to Kids Toy Drive. But today, right here in studio, you're going to get a chance to meet and hear from Marianne Szymanski. Marianne is the founder of Toy Tips, an entity that has been helping families pick the perfect toy gifts for decades. She's going to unpack some of the hottest toys for 2025. We'll talk about how consumer habits are changing and shifting from the buy side, and what the business side of toys and tariffs really looks like during this holiday season. Now, we're going to switch gears a little bit. Maybe we'll grab a drink. The president and CEO of Bars and Recreation, one of Milwaukee's most creative entertainment companies, they really do a wonderful job of blending play, competition, and connection for grown-ups. Axe throwing, indoor games of all kinds. About 18 months into the new fashioned in the Deer District. So Marla Portinger is going to join us, talk about what's new in the Deer District, what's new in West Allis, and kind of how they're managing the economic times during this festive holiday season. So whether you're shopping for kids or going out with coworkers or teammates, stick around. Today on the Upswing, we got your holiday season all planned. Welcome back to the Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. Every year, families and shoppers turn to Toy Tips. Toy Tips, yes, because they can trust it. Behind the reviews on Toy Tips is real advice, real research, and decades of experience and passion from the founder, Marianne Szymanski. Marianne, thank you for taking some time to spend with us here on the Upswing today.
Thanks for inviting me. I love talking toys.
Of course, of course. And 'tis the season for toys, without a doubt. But let's just go back. I want you to kind of level set on Toy Tips. It's been a staple in the Milwaukee market and really across the country for years. What inspired you to begin it? Go back to the beginning and just kind of talk about the origin story of Toy Tips for us.
It all started with a ladder.
All right.
So I used to work for Lego Toys. Absolutely okay. Loved my job. I went to Marquette University and graduated, and I had a sales position, and I had a call in a Toys R Us store. And when you merchandise toys from a Toys R Us store, at the time when we had Toys R Us, toys were up, really high up. So you had to take a ladder, climb the ladder, bring the Lego down. While I was on the ladder, there was a woman that kind of walked down the aisle, and she asked me one question. And that question was, what should I buy my grandchild, like brand new grandchild? And she had not bought toys for a generation. And I'm like, I can't really tell her Lego because Lego is not appropriate for a baby. But my boss was in the store. So I was thinking, oh, my gosh. Right. So I went home that day and I went and bought every magazine that I could find and looked at all the toy information.
Okay.
And everything is, you know, best toy ever. And then there was an ad for Mattel. This toy is appropriate for this age, sponsored by Fisher-Price, like with as far as advertising. Mm-hmm. And I thought, what is the unbiased source? There really wasn't one. Mm-hmm. And at the time, we didn't have the internet. Right. We didn't have information flowing easy. And I thought, okay, I'm going to create this. So when I left my job to start this, at first everyone was like, oh, you know, it's not going to work. Well, that was the motivating factor. And then I launched Toy Tips.
And so from a business perspective, you created a magazine first that was an aggregator of toy reviews from your lens and kind of a handful of experts around you?
It actually started with a 900 number, 1-900 Toy Tips at the time. You paid $2 a minute. It was 5 minutes, and I changed it every Sunday.
Wow.
And what happened was I started getting media and press picking this up, and I just started getting a lot of phone calls. So what that then turned into was a newsletter that retailers were sponsoring. Hmm. Toys R Us put one in the stores. Target put one in the stores. And that led to my own magazine.
So what's kept Toy Tips relevant through all the years, through all the shifts in media, through all the shifts in retail and how we all buy and shop?
I think the authentic research.
Yeah.
So we test toys. It's not like they're an award. It's not like someone pays me to say this is the best toy ever. We actually test the toys based on child development to find out what skills kids are building. Mm. So when parents buy toys, it's an investment into your child. You know, just as we're all growing normally and naturally, we're also getting that part of their personality and their thinking and their brain as far as what they're learning. And so I think when parents buy toys, just taking the time to really research what you want to buy is really taking your money and investing well.
Yeah. So when you look at the hottest toys for 2025 right now, you want toys that, you know, create joy and that are anchored in experience and that are fun and that are responsible. Like, there's so many different ways that, so many different lenses you can look at. What are the top toys and top categories that you're seeing right now?
So it's interesting that you use the word top, because you would have to define that by age category, by skill, and by interest. And, you know, the definition of the word toy has changed, too, over generations.
Of course.
So I always like to go back to the classics. The classic toys, why are they still on the shelf? Why do they still sell? Because they're fun. Everyone wants to play with something fun. You have a big smile on your face. You're probably thinking what Santa brought you.
Right.
You know, or what Santa didn't bring you. But, you know, the general brands, Play-Doh, we love to mush Play-Doh, and now there's so many competitors in that space. Lego, we love to build with Lego. It's more about what are you building, and then what are you deconstructing and building from that? And the instructions that you use are the instructions you don't use, and then you go into the digital category, and you look at all the pets that you never got in real life that you have all over your house.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to have you walk through some of the toys in a minute, but what are you seeing in terms of shifts on how people buy? Is it all about the TikTok link? Is unboxing via YouTube still a thing? Like, how are the kids finding the toys and then projecting that information onto the parents and the grandparents?
Influencers, TikToks, TikTok shop, what kids are saying. You know, everyone wants that smile. Everyone wants that joy and sparking that joy when they open the gift. Unboxing is not just at Christmas under the tree. Unboxing is every day on a YouTube channel watching someone else open something and then wanting it. Not that they necessarily use it. It's very trendy. People want what other people have. It's kind of sad because we just want what other people have when we should be thinking about what we really want.
That's right.
But that has made such an influence with the youngest of children, you know? And so when kids are on YouTube watching unboxings while mom's in the kitchen making dinner, it's also influencing them to be a consumer in a way that you just want stuff.
Yeah. We're talking with Marianne Szymanski from Toy Tips. So, Marianne, are you sensing that families are kind of planning and budgeting a little earlier this season? And what's your sense on kind of the general expense cost side and the impact of tariffs on toys?
Interesting. So some parents start planning right as the sales begin. It could be right after Christmas to right before Christmas, Black Friday, everything. But that's so they feel that they're getting deals on the toys they think they're buying that the kids want. And in reality, with tariffs, what's happening right now is the prices are changing, so people may have less to spend. You know, the average price of a toy can be between $15 and $50, depending on what kind of toy it is. But overall, I have seen families spend a minimum of $300 a year on toys to a maximum of thousands that they put on credit cards that they pay off with high interest because kids want them. And that's more of the digital space, the video games, all the more expensive toys. But overall, at this time of year is when you buy that big toy that's, you know, in a big box, especially for younger kids. And those can run to $300 each, too. Yeah. So I think that overall, parents have to be a little more conservative in their spending because the tariffs are, you know, at a bracket over 20%. Some retailers are working with manufacturers in a way. But as I go through toy aisles and look at prices, I just think, do kids really need to have so many?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a very, very good point. We're talking with Marianne Szymanski from Toy Tips. This is The Upswing, and you're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. Toys aren't just for kids. They tell a story about our culture, our value, and even the economy. I want to dig into this holiday season, what gift giving says about who we are this holiday season. Because, Marianne, I think it means something different based upon our age, right? And we were talking in the first segment about generational differences in toys. I want to have you expand on that a little bit. So, like, the grandparents, we're talking 70, 80-year-olds, probably have a way different lens of what a toy means today. How do you, then, as a grandparent listening, make sure you're buying the right toy for your 6-year-old, 7-year-old great-grandchild?
So grandparents are totally going to look at the learning. They want to buy something if they know that a child's going to learn from based on their experiences with their children, or if it's a great-grandchild, their children and their grandchildren already, and now great-grandchild. But they're going to look at it as, okay, I want to buy something that I know that I've seen played with before, the understanding that, like, you know, kids play with a certain interest of theirs, whatever that may be. But they look for the authenticity of play.
I've heard this and seen this in a couple business publications that the definition of a toy has kind of evolved. Do you sense that the collectible space, is that part of the toy space in terms of the dollars and cents of it all? Because I think, you know, sports cards and just the whole collectible business, it's not really a toy, but it's kind of what kids want.
I have seen grown adults wipe out sections at Target when, you know, certain collectibles are released. And the sad thing about it is the people that do that, are they playing with it? No, they're collecting it, they're reselling it, when there might be a child that really, really wants to play with that toy. But in truth, do we really grow up? Toys are for all ages, honestly. You know, in packaging, you want to definitely look at the package to make sure from a safety perspective, you're not giving it a toy to a child that would be younger. But from an older perspective, if I gave you a toy right now that you would want to open and play with, you'd do it, right?
Yeah,
so there's a lot of grown adults that want to have those memories. And there's nothing wrong with that. Releasing those memories brings positivity and smiles to your face.
And if we can foster curiosity through the toys,
yes,
I think all the much better, because that's what is going to help us build and grow into the future,
yeah,
right?
And grow community. You know, it's a great thing when you're sitting down with family members and, you know, Uncle Louie comes for Christmas and he's like, oh, so-and-so got this. And you're sitting down and playing together.
Yeah. You brought a couple of the hottest toys for 2025 with you today. You want to walk through some of those and tell us what you like about them and kind of what Toy Tips is seeing in these toys?
So size and small.
Okay.
No one needs to keep adding to collections of bedrooms with toys under the bed, in the closet, in the basement, in the attic, and everywhere.
We got enough stuff in our basement.
We have enough stuff. We just have enough stuff. So let's just play more smartly. So these cubes, this is the Rubik's Wow Cube, and this one is called Next Toy. You connect these to your TV and you're playing games. Now, we all love our Nintendo and Sega. I'm not saying that. But the thing is, from like a perspective of size, these are easy. Pop them in your bag when you're going to visit
someone's
house.
Tell us more about the Rubik's Wow Cube. I don't know a lot.
This
this lot one, about that product.
Okay, so this one is kind of brand new.
Okay.
So we all know the Rubik's Cube.
Yeah.
Well, this actually will play other games. So when you're playing with the Rubik's Cube,
so there's
cube,
a projector on it that magnifies onto a screen?
So,
or
yes, you need – I don't have it on. It's not activated. Right. So, but the idea is so that you can play other games.
Okay.
And you can play with people. You can play by yourself, obviously, too. But interaction. It's small.
Yeah.
You don't need to have all these systems and all these other pieces and parts that you need. Now, the thing is when you're young – like very young, you want to use different kinds of toys that enhance curiosity. You know, so if you are playing with puzzles that we saw out of COVID that all of a sudden everyone wanted to play with, people can play with them alone. This is called Cats in Boxes, and it's a puzzle that you – there's little cats in boxes, and you can totally play with this by yourself. It's a one player.
Okay.
But it's fun.
Yeah.
And it really – you know, when did you ever have Simon where you play Simon?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So
Cats in Boxes works really well, kind of like Chutes and Ladders, right? You want to have that familiarity in toys because it just anchors into our subconscious and creates – whoa, I need to buy that.
Yes, an element of surprise. I mean, who doesn't want to play with a cat in a box? You know what I mean?
And then the putty.
The crazy Aaron's
still,
thinking
is that still
putty.
Hot? Like,
oh,
it's,
my
like,
gosh.
That seems like it was kind of 10 years ago, but it's coming back and you're seeing it everywhere. Even like bookstores you walk into, it's like, well, there's putty everywhere.
But what's the reason for it? It reduces stress. You know, we're all stressed in different ways. And the thing is Crazy Aaron, he's just this really creative guy that comes up, and he and his team come up with different ideas for different textures and what you're doing with it. So it's not like it's just one. You want the different kinds. So, and now, and then slime overall is such a big category. So when my daughter was, you know, in middle school, I went through the slime phase where there was glue everywhere and little charms all over the place. I never got to play with it. So I went to Target and bought myself my own set.
Ooh.
And if you see this, it's huge. It's called Fruity Fluff Fun. And this whole thing has like the mixings and the slime. But this is the kind of gift you bring to someone's house.
It's the kind of gift that parents love and kind of roll their eyes at. But you look at it, you're like, oh, this is fun for hours and hours.
Yes, but it's still trendy and fun. But you know what's great about it? This was only $20. Look at the size of this. That's the big thing. People are like, what is it? You have five kids to buy for or a neighbor. This is for everyone.
Yeah.
So you don't have to go out and buy so many toys. You can buy that fun gift that will take care of a bunch of siblings at once. That's a great uncle and aunt toy, in my opinion.
All right. Very good. I really appreciate you bringing in the hottest toys for the year. Can we end our segment here with a little toy trivia? And I want to test your toy knowledge. I mean, it's hard for me to ask a toy expert questions, but I'm going to, if that's all right, Marianne. All right, so Yahtzee. What was the original name of Yahtzee?
Oh, you know, I don't even know that one. Why'd you give me such a hard one?
Chutes and Ladders, Risk, Trouble, or Yacht Game?
Well, it's going to be Yacht Game.
Yahtzee was invented in 1956 by a Canadian couple on board a yacht.
There.
It was dubbed as the Yacht Game. I had no idea.
There you go.
There you go. And Yahtzee's still pretty hot today.
Yeah.
Like, from all ages.
And that would be going into like the grandparents, great-grandparents. They would play that totally in the 70s. That was the hot game then.
Yes. All right. One more. Whose son designed and developed Lincoln Logs?
Oh, boy.
Paul Klee, John F. Kennedy, Abraham Lincoln, Frank Lloyd Wright, ooh, Wisconsin tie, or Pablo Picasso?
I'm going to go with Frank Lloyd Wright.
John Lloyd Wright, son of Frank Lloyd Wright,
got it.
Created Lincoln Logs after seeking techniques used by his dad in his business.
Because see how that generation plays.
That's right. Building and growing and playing and always staying curious. That's what toys are all about. Marianne, as we wrap up here, if you can give one toy tip for consumers as we get through Christmas and Hanukkah right now, what would that be?
Know the child you're buying for. Really know, first of all, their age for a safety perspective, but what their skills and what their interests are. And if you're buying off of an angel tree so you don't know that child, you know, a lot of times there's lists of what you want. If there's not something there that you can find, go with the classics. They're fun. They're still around. And kids love to play with those.
Very good. Marianne Skamansky, president, founder of Toy Tips. I appreciate all you do to keep us engaged and relevant and in the know with the hottest toys of 2025 and beyond.
Thank you, Jeff.
Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. A big welcome to Marla Poininger, who is president and CEO of Bars and Rec. Marla, thanks for taking the time out of your busy day to be here with us.
Hi, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
Of course, of course. So, Bars and Rec, for people that, listeners that don't know, Milwaukee-based hospitality group behind Amped, Axe MKE, Nine Below, North South Club, Game Show MKE, Splash Studio, the still somewhat new fashioned in Deer District, and the brand new Slingshot Bar in West Dallas. You have definitely built a full arsenal, if you will, of activity-based centers across the area. I want to just ask you, before we kind of get into some of the economics and community of it all, like, what's that kind of one thing, that one theme that is woven throughout all your businesses that make them go?
So I would say that the common thread is really social engagement. Our goal is always to bring people together in an environment where they're face-to-face, there's no screen between them, they're actually interacting with each other, and they're creating shared memories. And that started with Splash Studio.
What were you doing before Splash? Kind of bring us, give us the Marla origin story a little bit.
We're going way, way back.
Let's go way back.
Okay, so before Splash Studio, I was living in the Third Ward.
Okay.
I had an awesome apartment that looked over Summerfest. No kids.
Right.
And I was the executive director for a local nonprofit. Mm. I had just finished my MBA in arts management and nonprofit management. And David, my husband, was working in supply chain management at MillerCoors.
Okay.
So we both had this sort of entrepreneurial spirit and desire. And again, the key here is no kids. Mm-hmm. So we had free time. And we were like, what can we do that is entrepreneurial and combines our love of art and beer?
Yeah.
And that was sort of the genesis for the original Splash Studio.
And starting it in the historic Third Ward, which is a very art-based neighborhood.
Bingo.
Obviously, other things in that neighborhood for sure. But that was a prime spot to begin.
Prime spot. Great timing. There was real estate available, and it was just a fantastic idea for a hobby.
Yeah.
That was the goal. So, you know, we were both working our full-time jobs, and then after work, we would come home and like rush off and unlock the door of the bar and then work there until, you know, 2 a.m. and then come back home, maybe sleep for a couple hours, maybe take a shower and then go back to our full-time job in the morning. And we did that for a long, long time, just sort of doing it for fun, but also like realizing this is a thing.
Yeah.
It was really people started coming and they started coming often and they started bringing their friends and all of a sudden we were selling out and it was just wonderful energy.
So when you mapped out the business plan for your original venue, did you know that you wanted to have a portfolio of places across the area or how did that come about?
Yeah, no, absolutely not. Okay. It was literally just going to be a hobby. It was never intended to be a career.
So making that choice to do the second location, walk us through that.
So actually the first decision was expanding Splash Studio.
Okay.
We took over the space next door to Splash Studio. It had been a former furniture store and it just happened to become available. And we had a lot of interest from corporate teams looking to do the activity as a team building event. And what kept happening is that we were booking out our main studio for these corporate events. And then our everyday clients kept saying, well, why can't I come in? I want to do it. Well, we were fully, you know, bought out by these team building activities. And so that's when we decided to expand next door and had a studio just for private events.
Okay.
So that was, again, really popular. And we started to realize that we were at a decision point in which we could possibly make this a job, at least for one of us.
Mm-hmm.
But it was either going to be, we can do more Splash Studios, but that would then require us to probably go further away geographically, or we could identify what were the key success factors of Splash Studio and pull those out and try to put them into a different activity. Yeah. And expand that way, be able to stay local, do it in Milwaukee, which we loved, and take our current clients and just say, hey, you had a great experience at Splash Studio. Can we give you that same value proposition over here?
Yeah.
And that was the genesis for Nine Below.
So fast forward, many venues later, you're at Deer District with the new fashion now. 25,000 square feet,
yeah.
NBA arena in your shadows right across the way. Talk to us about that creation, what you've learned there being, you know, just such a marquee center of gravity in the economic heart of the state of Wisconsin.
Taking over and building the new fashion was certainly another turning point in the history of bars and recreation, and certainly in my career professionally. We knew that it was going to be a big leap forward for us and for our team, but I don't think we realized just how much it would put us on the map.
Mm-hmm.
That it really sort of propelled us into this new realm of hospitality, into this new world of sort of everybody knows who we are now, which is what we always wanted, but it happened very quickly. And there was a lot of pressure. There was a lot of, you know, the world was kind of, the world is maybe too intense, but the community was certainly watching, like, what's going to happen with this space? This is an important space to Milwaukee. Are they going to chop it up and turn it into a bunch of different things? Are they going to, you know, put in a Trader Joe's, you know, what is it going to be? And it was really important to the Bucks and to us that it became a locally owned space. And that felt like maybe we could do that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we can take everything that we've learned in all of our other successful locations and bring it into this behemoth 25,000 square foot space. I think we're still learning how to do that. It's only been about 18 months. There's still a lot to learn. But I think that the success that we have found is in bringing all of the things that are the best about Milwaukee and Wisconsin and keeping it hyper-local. So we're bringing in, you know, obviously there's the bowling and the dart ball and the curling. Those are really core Wisconsin activities.
Right.
But layering in Bunzel's Brats and Pete's Pops and Sprecher Root Beer and, you know, all of the things that you would expect to find at a really traditional Milwaukee local spot. And making sure that it's upscale and that it's high-end and it's what you would be really proud to show off to your friends, but also it's a space that you are comfortable hanging out there every time you go to a Bucks game.
Yeah. Talking with Marla Poininger from Bars and Recreation. Marla, when we come back, I want to get your thoughts on what you see next for Deer District. You have a venue on Milwaukee's east side. The building is up for sale. I want to see maybe what the plans are for that space. And then I want to dive into the world of slingshots a little bit out in West Allis. Maybe we'll talk holiday parties, too. This is The Upswing, and you're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman, joined in studio. Very thankful that Marla Poininger from Bars and Recreation took some time out of her busy day to spend it with us. Thanks again, Marla.
Thank you.
So as you look at the new fashion in Deer District, what do you want to see or what could we do as a community to activate Deer District more during the day? I'm sure you think about this. Like, how do you drive lunch traffic? How do you maybe have a bigger brunch crowd? Game days are amazing there.
Yep.
But what do you see as the grand vision for Deer District, you know, from your lens?
This is a question that I think about way too often.
Yeah. That's good. That's good.
I think the last time I was here with you, Jeff, we told you that our vision, my husband and I, our vision is to put on a Christmas market in Deer District. And we did it.
Yeah.
The holiday market happened in late November, just a couple weeks ago, and it was a massive success.
Yeah.
I think it exceeded everyone's expectations in terms of how great it looked, how many people came down, and how happy everyone was about that holiday market. And for me, it was the best possible proof of concept in terms of what that Deer District Plaza and attached beer garden can be going forward. I have so many ideas about how we can take what was successful from that holiday market and make it all year round. Mm-hmm. And that's what I want to see for that neighborhood, for that community, and for the surrounding businesses. And that's what we need in order to be sustainable.
Yeah, I really liked how kind of the beer garden area flowed into your space. It really activated the entire area. Obviously, people are comfortable, knew what a Chris Kindle type market was to begin with.
Yeah.
But I think, as you said, there's a lot of lessons learned there, and hopefully that can be activated throughout other seasons.
100%. I mean, the idea to pull it into the beer garden really unlocked so much, because what we struggled with in the past conversations about all of these ideas is that you can only do something for a short period of time until, assuming it's on the plaza, until you need that ingress and egress for the next concert or Bucks game. Yeah. And so it was never worth it to do something larger extended, because all of a sudden it has to be cleared out of the way. Yeah. So pushing it in the beer garden was all of a sudden like, we can do that, and we can do smaller activations on the plaza itself, but it becomes more intimate, it becomes more inviting, and it allows people to have that activity as the sort of the core anchor in the beer garden, and then go into the businesses for food and drink.
Yeah. As a local group, what are you seeing on the kind of the challenge side of the business right now? Is it staffing? Is it higher costs? Is it regulations? Is it competition? Is it all the above, Jeff?
So I thought about this question a lot. I think that the trend in terms of challenges right now is that this is obvious, but the economy is a little bit uncertain right now. Mm-hmm. People have, you know, we talk about personal balance sheets being a little bit weak right now. And so what that translates into for us is that customers are willing to pay for value. And so they will come down for a great meal, a great drink, a great night out if they think that the value is there. And also they have very high expectations. Yeah. And so it means...
That mean more pressure for you, especially
so
as a local?
Pressure.
You have to have that great first experience? Because if you don't...
So much pressure.
People are a little leery to come back again, right?
It means that we have to be perfect.
Yeah.
And it's really tough to give a fantastic experience across six venues every night when you've got 100 employees who, some of them, it's their first day. Some of them, they're having a bad day. Some of them, they just got in a fight with their boyfriend, right? And so I'm balancing trying to keep my employees happy and engaged and feeling valued, and then giving the customers the best experience they ever had. Mm-hmm. And if the customer, for whatever reason, feels like it wasn't perfect, then they may write a one-star review and say, I'm never coming back, and it was horrible. And then I'm, you know, sort of caught trying to make up for that. And it's really tough, because I'm working so hard to train everyone and be perfect all the time. But if you slip through the cracks at any point in time, then it's really hard to recover from that. And I think that's a challenge for all small local businesses right now, is that they're held to, honestly, a much higher standard than chains and franchises and big corporate.
Yeah. Well, and as customers, we can all have a little bit more grace, I think, you know, knowing that it's a tough world out there for everyone, and go wherever you're going to go, support local, support national, go out, spend money. But have a sense of, hey, I'm here to have a good time. But you know what? Look into the lens of the server. Look into the lens of the bartender.
Right.
And hey, we're all people in this thing.
And honestly, if you have a not great experience, reach out. There are always contact information and ways to connect with the owner if it is a local business. And I know that all of the local businesses that are struggling right now would love to hear feedback about how they can make it better. That's what we're all trying to do. And so before going to Yelp or Google or those public platforms, connect with us and tell us, like, hey, this server was having a bad night. We can fix that.
Yeah.
We can fix, the hamburger wasn't cooked right. That we can fix, and we can make it right for you and everybody else. But a Google review lives on forever.
Right.
And it may encourage people who might not come then in the future. And that has a snowball effect on small businesses that I don't think people always realize. Yeah.
Marla, let's talk about Nine Below, your mini golf location on Milwaukee's east side. It's in a building that's recently been put up for sale, where Beans and Barley has been housed for 50 years, yeah, almost 52 years. What's the current status of Nine Below, and kind of what's the plan for its future if and when the building does sell?
Yeah. So I don't know much about the sale of the building. Yeah. What I know, what I've been told by the current owner, is that the new owner, whoever it is, would like Nine Below to continue to operate, and that is what we plan to do.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah. That's all you can do for now.
It's all
keep
good.
On keeping on. That's
and,
good. I like it.
We plan to bring Nine Below to the people as long as they want us to be there.
All right. Looking ahead to 2026 and beyond, what's next for Bars and Rec? More slingshot bars. I know we didn't get to the slingshot bar in West Dallas, so maybe we'll have you come back and do a full walkthrough of the slingshot bar.
I'd love
bar,
to.
But is there another slingshot bar coming, or what's the next concept?
So we have two main goals for 2026.
Okay.
The first goal is to expand our catering program.
Okay.
So a lot of people don't know that Bars and Recreation in 2025 really hard launched our own catering program. We have an incredible chef, Chef Clifford Hull, who has built out that program. So we now cater our own food to all of our venues. And we have inked catering deals with a lot of local hotels and some ones that will be announced very soon, some very exciting venues. And we can offer that catering to offices and family reunions and weddings and places that might want a little bit of extra Bars and Recreation fun for their holiday party. That's goal number one. And goal number two is to expand beyond our current footprint and continue to grow and build new opportunities for our employees and customers to engage with us in ways that they have not done so before.
Growth is always good. Well, all the best to you and your team for holiday parties and more for the rest of the season. And
thank
again,
you.
Appreciate you taking the time to be with us here today. Welcome back to The Upswing. One final note here. The Beans and Barley building. I mentioned Beans and Barley when we were talking with Marla. The rumor on the street is that the building that houses Beans and Barley at 1901 East North Avenue may be under contract and sold. Beans and Barley, an iconic restaurant and cafe and mini retail and grocery store, really a Milwaukee mainstay for 50-plus years, announced last week that it was closing. The owner said the time has come, especially since the building owner was placing the building for sale. They've been in the business for a long time, just done an amazing job. Selfishly, I want their burrito recipe to live somewhere because they have the best burritos in the city. But Brickway Commercial had listed the 18,000-square-foot property for sale for $2.25 million. So keep your eye on a sale of that building. But the big thing is, you know, what will replace Beans and Barley once it closes on January 31st, 2026? Something we're going to keep our eye on here at The Upswing for sure. My guess, just a hunch, you know, we could see another small grocer, small retail there. I think the neighborhood is primed for it. You have Whole Foods at the east. You have Kroger, Pick and Save up on the west. Keeping it really true to what Beans and Barley was all about, I think, is important for that neighborhood. But we shall see. It's all up to whomever is the new building owner.